Welcome everybody to our August 12, 2014 County Council meeting. Sorry for the delay. We'll get started. We'll call to order. Approve the agenda, Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, Council. At this time, we have no recommended amendments to the agenda.
Entertained a motion to approve the agenda.
I do that.
Motion, Mrs. Deaver, second, Mr. Wilson. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried. We had minutes of July 29th. Any corrections, concerns, additions? Hearing none, they'll stand approved. Correspondence, Mr. Moore?
There is none, Mr. President.
Any correspondence from Council?
No, not this time.
Mr. Lawson.
All right, thank you, Mr. President. Today's first item on the agenda is a discussion regarding the county code as it relates to vendors, produce stands, and signs. Before we get started, I have a sort of an outline to read to frame up today's discussion, and then we also have staff available here and our county attorneys to answer any questions. So the intent of today's discussion is to highlight a trend that we are seeing in the types of operations that we're referring to as vendors, produce stands, or roadside stands, and signs, and to seek the council's thoughts on how to best address these issues. Currently, the county code allows produce stands and roadside stands. Specifically, section 115-20 states in part, as a permitted use, that temporary removable stands for not over 6 months use per year for seasonal sales of products raised on the premises and products raised on other lands in Sussex County owned or leased by the owner of the premises on which the stand is located. One point I need to make, the overwhelming majority of roadside stands and produce stands are completely legal in this county and within the letter of the law of our code. I should also state that we understand and appreciate the impact agriculture has on this county and our state. We do not intend to hamper this economic driver in any way, even though today's discussion and focus is on operations selling local ag products. With that being said, we are seeing more and more stands operating that are not legal because of the location of the stand. For example, if you have ever seen a produce stand in a commercial site like a business parking lot, that operation may have additional requirements, which could include a site plan review, a variance for setbacks, and sometimes even a conditional use. In addition, we are seeing a large number of signs used to promote these types of operations. Usually the signs are in the right-of-way, and in some cases the number of signs far exceed the code's permitted number. Yet due to the temporary nature of produce stands, enforcement of the code, especially as it relates to signs and persons selling in a temporary site, is sometimes deficient. Also want to bring your attention an issue with what we are calling vendors or temporary mobile businesses that usually operate in parking lots or commercial sites or even in the right-of-way next to public roads. For example, think of the seafood vendor who sells their products in the parking lot at your local convenience store, or the hot dog stand at the entrance of one of the local box stores. Again, these operations have additional requirements, which would include a site plan review, a variance for setbacks, and even sometimes a conditional use. And to receive the appropriate permitting from the county requires time and additional expense. One such case recently required a commercial business to spend thousands of dollars to sell a product in their parking lot from a mobile cart, even though the entire site was commercially zoned, and the food product he was selling came from the very same business just inside the store. This is a recent application that went through all the proper process and is legal to operate today in the county. Staff have come together to make me aware of some of these issues that they address day-to-day out on the road. I've met with our county attorney, our director of planning and zoning, as well as staff within planning and zoning. We have a couple of possible solutions, and we want to address those today and discuss that with you today and get council's input as it relates to these issues, and at some point in the future, if necessary, come back with this topic and address it as you deem necessary. So that's my introduction. happy to have any conversation, and I would ask Mr. Robertson if he would like to join the conversation, since he's helped us work on this, and add anything to what I may say.
So sometimes we require a conditional use, and other times we do not, is what you're saying. I understand that.
Vince, do you want to address that? It depends on the circumstances.
Okay. So, okay.
And part of that explanation, put in is it the state law that permits a farmer to sell his product on his land, right, in front of his farm?
In our county code.
That is our county code. Okay.
Yes.
Just somehow bring that in, and are there any restrictions? Because sometimes you see them right on the shoulder of the road, and that's the probably the dilemma is, are they safe and not safe, and the type of road they're on also.
And that's the issue that we have to look at. And I looked at, just preliminarily, not knowing which direction council would go in, just some other counties to see how they dealt with. And they're all, to some degree or another, similar to ours. Some have more detail on setbacks. Some have more detail on the size of that you can go without getting some additional approval. It boils down to how far council wants to go in regulating them beyond what we already have, which is the limited time period, and it has to be on property owned by the farmer.
You have a prepared statement?
No, I do not.
I was going to say, if you did, go ahead and say it, then we'll answer.
Well, I don't, and as I think as Mr. Lawson said, what we're looking for is some direction from county council on where to go. We didn't want to start off on one path and county council want to go in another, so we're looking, frankly, for some direction from
you. You're not saying overall it has to be on land owned by the farmer, are you?
Well, the way it's worded right now, and I think Mr. Lawson touched on it. Bear with me one second. That it's 115.20. Mm-hmm. It's a temporary removable stand for not over 6 months use per year,
right,
for seasonal sales of products raised on the premises and products,
right,
raised on other lands in Sussex County, owned or leased by the owner of the premises on which the stand is located.
Okay, so he could lease a commercial property, and could have the stand, vegetable stand or whatever, mm-hmm, there, because that it's in that farmer's name as a leasee, right? That's what you're saying.
Well, the way it talks, and I'd have to talk with Lawrence and Shane about that. It does talk about owned or leased, so we'd need to see the background documents that support why they're where they are, to make sure that it complies with the code.
Is there a problem? Is there a big problem? I'm just wondering what you want.
I don't know that there's a problem. It's just one of those things where it's been growing, and I know that there's been issues that we've seen at planning and zoning about signs. I know there's been a concern that there's been a proliferation of signs associated with the farm stands particularly. Mm-hmm. The other issue, sort of similar but not quite the same, as vendors. We've had a planning and zoning, and you've seen as well, where vendors, the hot dog stands are the famous one, is the gentleman outside of Lowe's,
right,
where they're mobile food carts or trucks, and they've had to go the conditional use route. And there's been a feeling at planning and zoning that, again, we wanted to bring to council as to whether it's appropriate for something that's mobile and temporary and drives home, most times, whether that needs to go through the whole process of a conditional use, given the really small scale of those as well. So,
but they're on property owned by Lowe's.
That's right. It's commercially zoned property, and there's any number of them that we have seen. There was one over on Route 26. I can remember one that we did off of Route 24, which was literally a hot dog stand with bicycle wheels on it. I don't know where, but they came in through the whole conditional use process. So, I use the Lowe's one. That's kind of the one that comes up at planning and zoning most often as an example, but there's others.
Can I address Mrs. Deaver's question? Is there a problem? Well, like I said in my statement, the traditional produce stand on the side of the road, whether it's a large operation on a farm where they're growing the produce and selling it right there, or even a small garden with, you see them commonly, the three-step sale right there on their front yard.
Mm-hmm.
Those are not the problem.
Right,
It's the people that pull into the parking lots. They take two or three parking spots. They're there all summer long. That is not legal within the county code unless they've come before this body or P&Z and received the conditions that are required to operate. And that is where the problem lies.
That's the problem.
And that's for some of the direction we're looking. And do we want to have them spend thousands of dollars to operate in a parking lot, or do we want a simple site plan review process?
We have a permit requirement that's all-encompassing?
We could, yes. We don't right now, and that would be something we'd have to change, but yes, we could entertain that idea.
Isn't that private property? Walmart there, don't they own that property?
I don't know specifically as to Walmart. I mean, obviously somebody owns these commercial sites.
They just had it blacktop. Who paid for that? It didn't come to the county's
money. No, that's right. It's private, right? Whether you ask whether Walmart owns it, I don't know if Walmart.
It's all private property.
Yeah, it's all private.
It looks like to me Walmart certainly had the right to say you're not allowed here or you're allowed here. Because sometimes they'll say, we don't want nobody in front of our store or whatever. They come out and tell you that. It seems like to me it's their property.
But, Sam, everything's private property, so everybody
no,
would have
to. No, it's not, George. I don't walk on your house because it's not private. It's private property. At least I think it is.
Everything's private. Anyway, I got a question. Can I ask a question? Are you done, Sam?
Mr. Wilson, you shot the floor.
No, I'll let him go.
Are you done? Okay. I think here's the problem. You got a food vendor operating without a lot of times the investments and the permits, et cetera, operating right down from a business who has gone through all the steps, who's paying employees and paying taxes, et cetera, and they find that they don't like it. They feel as if that's taking money out of their pocket, and they've been able to, you know, circumvent, you know, a lot of the ordinances and laws, et cetera. So that's the problem with food vendors. And then produce stands, I think the same thing. We down my way, we've had a guy who went through all kinds of hoops and jumps to get his produce stand, and then down the road, a guy comes in with his couple umbrellas and stuff and sets up on the other side of town. And we finally, it's like they pop up on weekends and then they disappear during the weekends and stuff, so it's difficult. So, and I understand, his complaint was, I came in front of this county council, I went through two public hearings, I paid $3,000, I had to get surveys, I had et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Big expense. And then they look down the street, here's a guy with two umbrellas. That's the conflict. So, the farmer, our problem with our ordinance is, we have to go enforce. Sam Wilson's out in front of his, you know, farm selling stuff. Should our inspector stop and say, okay, Sam, do you own this land? You know, proof of ownership and all this other stuff, because many times these setups aren't. The other thing is, if they're on major highways, this is a big problem when you've got like Route 9 or something like this, and it's just sitting on the side of the road and people are pulling over in the shoulder, you know, slowing down, and there's no place to pull off. That's unsafe. So we ought to maybe look at, you know, how they're located, maybe on arterial or on our major roadways, identify these roads and say, if you're trying to put a temporary stand here, you're going to have to do X, X, and X. Now, if you've got, you know, a side back road, maybe it's not a big issue, but it's the guy who's paid all the money to do it right versus the guy who doesn't, and that's where the conflict arises. And I think that the farmer operating, I think, under our ordinance, as long as they've got a way to get off the road, if they own the land, they ought to be able to get in there with a scraper and make a place to park,
Would you say it'd be fair if the guy across the street has come all in here and got all the ordinances, and I come along, I grow tomatoes, and I want to open up across the street, I wouldn't be allowed to open up?
Because this
guy came all through the ordinances?
No, that's permitted. That's permitted. The guy.
I'm asking you, what do you think about that?
I don't have a problem with that. That's been the ordinance for 30 years.
That's just what I want to know.
But what the problem is the guy who comes in and parks in a parking lot of some business for the weekend and or during the week and just pops in, and that's the conflict, Sam. So how do we address it? Like, I think planning and zoning is correct. We ought to look at something to streamline this. I think maybe could our director do it over the counter?
That's a possibility, yes.
And me, see, I'd have no problem with that. That they would go in. But I think there ought to be some minimal setbacks, even for the farmer. We ought to make sure it's safe. We ought to make sure that there's room to get off the road, because that's the dangerous part.
Okay. How about if this guy, say I'm a farmer, and I go to Walmart, I say I'd like to sell a few tomatoes at Frontier, maybe somewhere in the parking lot. That's okay? Now, I didn't grow them there.
No.
Are you trying to say I need to come also to the county and get a permit, get permission? Them property owners that owns the property, wouldn't be right?
I'm saying that's correct. Under our current way we've done it for 30 or 40 years, that would be correct.
Don't forget, Walmart came to this county and got all the permits to make that a commercial piece of property.
Right.
Now, why is it going to be specifically what they sell there now?
Because we usually have a site plan approval, and the site plan shows the parking, and the parking is supposed to be coordinated with a formula to the size of their building and what they do, and then when you bring in a produce stand taking up parking and taking up thing, then you've got, again, a conflict. So we want to make sure, I think, that there's sufficient parking. At the Walmart, that parking lot is full every day. You would have a hard time maybe taking out X number of spots without some kind of approval. You take the outlet malls. The outlet malls are full. Any cloudy, rainy day, there's no parking there. Now, then, other places, there might be sufficient. So I think there still should be a process, Sam, because, again, there's a guy who's down the road or is like, you know, legitimate operation, Sunshine Produce, right there on Coast Highway. I'm sure he's got all the permits, you know, everything that's required. He's got employees. He's paying employment taxes, et cetera, et cetera. And those people are the ones that are, they don't like somebody just being able to plop in next to them.
So if we go in that.
And they've paid us fees.
If we go in that direction.
Yes.
You come up to my farm and you bring your four-wheeler. And I said, George, you can't ride on my farm because it's not been zoned yet. I could make, this would make it commercial. This would be on my farm help.
Yeah. You're talking about a four-wheeler?
Well, you're going almost the same direction.
I don't
if
know.
You think about it, if you don't watch yourself, you're going to take away what property rights is left.
No, it's not. It's not a property rights
issue.
I think one of the things we're trying to do is make it as streamlined and consistent and as easy for people to comply with, so that we don't have one farmer or one property owner treated one way and went through the process, and somebody else just opening up. Because that just makes conflict within those two farmers or those two businesses. And one of the things that we talked about was having a process by which you would come in and present it to planning and zoning. And if it met certain minimal criteria, it would just get approved. There may be like a inspection fee, a minor fee, I don't know, whatever. It'd be cheaper than going through the whole conditional use process. And then if planning and zoning felt, well, this exceeds the scope of what's a farm stand or a temporary vendor, then it would go through either special exception at the Board of Adjustment, which may be quicker and cheaper, or planning and zoning and county council.
Could it also be possible if you did a scenario like that, somebody gets in there with a small stand, and next thing you know, it gets very successful, and 3 or 4 years down the road, would then planning and zoning have the ability, and we should have the ability to step in and say, you know, you've kind of past this threshold of you're now a huge stand and this and that, and you need to have certain things like a parking lot and stuff like that.
I mean,
there needs to be some kind of trigger to say when does the small little, you know, couple peach baskets versus, you know, a full-fledged operation, because some of them can be quite busy.
Oh, that's true.
Right. I have a question. What have we been doing about these pop-up vendors? Enforcement, what is it? Is that something we have to pay people to go out and shut down, or what's...
It's a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm.
We chase them, so to speak, when we can. We operate Monday through Friday, so if they're temporary on weekends, there's got to be special provisions to go out and chase them on weekends. We have, as Mr. Cole alluded to, we've got people that have gone through the system and they're completely legal and spent the time, money, and effort. And we have others that have, quite frankly, thumbed their nose at the county and our code. And you run into that issue, too, because you've got one person that's done it right and another person that is not. And that causes the conflict that Mr. Robertson is referring
to. But we have authority to shut them down, do we not? Or is what you're saying is we don't? What are you saying there?
No, we absolutely have the authority to shut them down and pursue that. With the thousands of produce stands and operations that exist in the county during the summer, we could probably monopolize the entire P&Z department if we chose to be very vigilant in making sure every operation was to the letter of the law.
I don't think that's a good idea.
Right.
Well, we're basically complaint driven on them. When we get complaints, we go after them. But like you say, we're not riding down the road trying to close people down. I was going to just say, Mr. President, why don't we? Is there a consensus that we'd like to streamline it?
Well, let's see if we have more comments.
Anybody else?
Members of Fellowship, your comments.
yes. Thank you, Mr. President. Are we still complaint-driven?
Of course.
Or do our inspectors unilaterally investigate out-of-compliance property?
Both. Complaint-driven, for sure. And If an inspector is riding down the road and they see something that's in violation, they will approach the operation.
Well, that basically nullifies us as a complaint-driven county, because I view it as one or the other. It may be necessary, it may be prudent to return to the complaint-driven policy and tell our inspectors that if something's out of compliance, you know it's out of compliance, but nobody cares. Nobody's complaining. We got enough other stuff to do. We got enough to just investigate those that are being complained about. So maybe step one is returning to a 100% complaint-driven policy. I guess when we talk about a full parking lot at Walmart and a vendor for shrimp or whatever produce shows up, I'm with Mr. Wilson. That's private property. If the owner of that Walmart gives permission and he loses business because his parking lot is full, I don't think it's this council's job to micromanage how he runs that Walmart. He may feel that having that unit out there brings more people into his store. But if it's preventing people from parking so they can go to his store, that's really his problem, I believe. What is the closing down process? You say we definitely can close down a business. What exactly is that process?
We would cite them for violation of the code, and then we would work our way through the courts and attempt to enjoin the operation so that it would either comply or the courts would order it to close. In my 4 years, we've not done that.
Okay, so that is kind of a hollow threat. Okay. Well, but number one, if we truly care about people following our code, I don't know that we should have such a hollow threat. If there is something so egregious out there that we have to close them down, I guess I ask the question, why are we not aggressively trying to close them down? I don't favor any new regulations. In fact, I think if a produce stand is on commercial property, that's fine. I don't think they should come back in again for a site plan so that we can measure the distance between them and parking spaces or how many spaces they take up. Setback requirements, you know, again, it's something, if we are truly complaint-driven, we need to wait for somebody to say, you know, their stuff is too close to my adjoining property.
Other words, what you're saying, Vance, is if Walmart's got a problem, there's people being on their parking lot, they should call the police and say, they're trespassing, I've asked them to leave. It's their problem. Where is the county's, why does the county want to get their nose under every tent that comes up? That's my problem.
No, I'm not talking about that, going out
I'm
hunting
glad to hear
up
that,
people.
Joe.
What I'm talking about, what I'm interested in is smoothing out the permissions, making them much more practical and much simpler, and fewer people having to go through planning and zoning and spend all that money for a produce stand. So yeah, I think there's got to be a way we could make it simpler and more practical.
Well, the problem is the parking issue is part of the ordinance. So the ordinance requires certain parking requirements, and then when you take up the parking requirements, you're in violation of the ordinance. So you better, I caution you all, there's still going to be the situation, the conflict, where the guy who comes in and goes through the process, pays all the fees, whatever the process is, but currently we have a process, versus the guy who doesn't. And we better either streamline it all to put them all on an even playing field. You still can't have the guy can do it, you know, on a shoestring versus the guy who has to do it such and such. And there's got to be setbacks. They're sitting. I had a guy on Coastal Highway who was standing out there with a big sign right in the shoulder, and the traffic's going 55 miles an hour, and he's as close as me as and to Mike to the white line where the traffic is, and he's sitting right on the corners and things like this. So there needs to be some, I think, some minimal restrictions, like I think what he said. So I would just say that I think we agree there should be a change, and why not planning and zoning look to easing it and see what your recommendation is. Should it be a variance? Should it be over the counter? What are the minimum restrictions? And then we'll have something in black and white we can discuss, because right now we're kind of just shooting from the hip. You know, give us our personal reflections on and how you like produce and this and that and everything else. But I still think you got to be concerned about a guy who does it legit versus a guy who doesn't, because what will happen is people say, well, why go do it legit? You know, they're just letting it do this way. So you'll not have anybody. It may even get worse. So I would say let's send it back to planning and zoning and say, give us something. We think, and is there a consensus that we think what we do is cumbersome, right?
Yes.
So let's.
Roberts, do you have some comments?
That's their job. Let's let them have a recommendation.
Roberts.
Just, I think, to Mr. Phillips' point, talking about enforcement, that's true on the produce stand side, but I want to make clear that on the, I think there's consensus about this, but on the vendor side, right now, if they're on the Walmart parking lot, a vendor wanted to come in like a food cart or a food truck, they would have to go through the conditional use process. I think that is one thing that what I'm hearing from council is we need to look at, take a concrete look at that and eliminate that from the conditional use process, I think is what I'm hearing, because that's overburdensome on somebody in a Walmart who just wants to sell hot dogs to the Walmart customers.
As long as it's food, we need to make sure it's food, not other products. Then we venture into crafts and this or, you know, whatever, or purses or sunglasses. We'll have kiosks, all of this stuff. So if it's limited to food, I think we ought to do that.
That goes into retail and wholesale products, too, you're talking about. You're talking about a hot dog might originally came off the farm when it was chickens, but it's gone through a lot of processing to get there. It's also gone down to the retail market to buy it, or wholesale, friend. Now, when you talk about watermelons, cantaloupes, sweet corn, tomatoes, all those kind of things, it's another product. Mm-hmm. For example, I used to come in here 40, 50 years ago with my kids, and we were selling watermelons up here in the courthouse. And Bob Stickles, who was, you all know, came along and said, I need a permit. Well, actually, the permit was worth more than my load of watermelons was. And I only sold watermelons about once or twice a year. Now, am I kind of foolish or not to go get a permit? So what was my alternative? I didn't have one alternative. I said, I'll just give the watermelons away. I'd be cheaper. So are we trying to drive the farmers that sells once or twice in town or somewhere where they might want to meet the public's need? Because it must be a need or they wouldn't be here buying from me. So we got to be careful of that. We got to watch ourselves. We're going to cause more headaches. If I was a farmer, I would not come up here and do all the things that maybe Mr. Cole requires me to do. Come up here and get all these permits every year and all this nonsense to go through all these different regulations to try to get a job here or try to sell watermelons. It's not worth it. It'd be cheaper for me to just go on down to Laurel's auction block and sell the things and forget the public. If that's what they want to do, they want to drive the farmer out of business to sell a load of watermelons once in a while, then we're going back the right way. If we're not, then we better be a little more lenient
Sam.
On allowing these people to do this business.
Mr. Phillips.
We talked a little bit about entrances, and again, I think that's a DLDOT issue. It shouldn't be us. Somebody along the road is a safety issue that state police should certainly address, somebody that is causing a traffic concern.
Right.
And I think, though, the main thing that we are missing here is that we're just making it harder and harder on the little guy to go out and make a buck. I just don't have a problem with these temporary stands. I know how hard it is to keep a temporary stand active. My daughter had a produce stand for about 6 weeks, two summers ago. And it was very hard. It was hard work. She was paying for college expenses. It was a great experience for her. But it's not that easy to operate a little stand like that. And we are just adding to the burden on the little guy that wants to get into a little bit of business during the summertime.
Got one last thing.
Cole.
I hate to inform you guys, but I know you two are farmers, but I actually had a produce stand and didn't grow one thing. But I knew how to try to make a dollar.
Good.
So I would go out and buy my produce. I would ride over to the western side of the county, load it all up, come back and sell it. Wonderful. Now then, but I was legal. I was doing it in the city limits of Fenwick Island. So there was a lot of these. I mean, they're making it sound like it's America and, you know, a pie and
God
waving flags. It's the farmer, the farmer, the farmer. No, a lot of these are not the farmer. A lot of these people have gone to the block or gone to over here to these wholesalers and have set up and they've set up illegal. They haven't grown a thing because I did it. And I know the guys who were complaining to me about the illegal operation don't grow a thing. Most of the produce people are business people and are buying the product and selling it, reselling it. So are there farmers out there? Yes, of course there are. But there's other people. So we've got to be concerned when we come up with some rules and regulation. It's across the board. It's all kinds of people selling this stuff. So don't be naive enough to think it's just a farmer with a straw hat with a piece of straw sticking out of his mouth who looks like Sam Wilson selling some tomatoes.
Anything else, Mr. Cole?
No, I'm done.
Thank you. You're okay.
But I'd like to have it go back to P&Z.
Wait a minute, Mr. Phillips.
I don't have a problem with you being an entrepreneur. I think it's wonderful that you took the time to go to Laurel and to buy a farmer's produce. You helped the ag industry. Thank you. Keep it up. All these people out there who are hustling to make a buck, God bless you. We need more of you. And we don't need to red tape you or permit fee you to death.
Anything else from council?
Well, the only thing, again, I'm saying, there should be a way to make it simpler and more practical and not as so much overhead for a small business person. That's what I'm saying.
Thank you.
Anything else from council? Mr. Roberts, you have any more questions of council, or you think you have enough information to...
Yeah, I think I know pretty clearly on the produce stands, and on the, I don't want to make it so somebody has to sell 10,000 hot dogs to break even on the fees. So I think
very
I understand
good.
It completely. All right.
So is planning and zoning, Mike, going to come back with a recommendation to us? Is that basically
that's
what
that's
we're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Let us put our heads together, do our best to find some similar ways here to address this issue. And come back.
I'm confident they'll do a better job. And
thank you, Mr. Robertson, for your comments and information. Mr. Lawson, administrator's report.
Thank you. The administrator's report for August 12, 2014, item number one. Attached, please find the call statistics for the fire and ambulance call board for July 2014. There were 18,645 total calls handled for the month of July. Of those 911 calls, 84% were made from wireless phones. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir.